All right, so get this. We're going to take a deep dive into the
Oh.
origins of prophecy in ancient Israel.
Okay.
Pretty cool, huh? We're working with this really thought-provoking lecture by Robert Vinoy.
Sounds interesting.
It really is. And one of the things that he tackles head-on is this assumption that's, a lot of people have that Israelite prophecy was basically just a copycat
Right.
of what was going on in the cultures around them.
Yeah, totally.
So, you've got Mesopotamia, you've got Egypt, you've got Canaan. Were they really just borrowing ideas, or was there something more unique going on in ancient Israel?
Right, yeah.
So to kick things off, let's head over to Mesopotamia.
Okay.
And one of the really interesting sources that Fenoy highlights are these things called the Akkadian letters from Mari.
Okay.
And these are like ancient messages on clay tablets,
Wow.
where people were claiming to receive messages from deities like Bagan.
Oh,
And
interesting.
then they would go and deliver these messages to the king.
Okay, so kind of like prophets in a way.
Yeah, on the surface, it sounds pretty similar, right? You've
Yeah.
got this idea of divine communication being relayed to a ruler.
Right.
But if you dig a little deeper, we start to see some pretty important distinctions.
Okay, I'm all ears.
So, for example, in those Mari letters, the messages often went through a whole chain of people before they actually reached the king.
So not a direct hotline to the top.
Not a direct hotline, no burning bush moment here.
Gotcha.
And then when you look at the content of those messages, it's also quite different from what we see in the Israelite prophetic tradition.
How so?
Well, the Mari messages were primarily focused on rituals and cultic obligations.
Oh,
So
okay.
things like, which sacrifices to offer and when and how to keep the gods happy.
Right, appease the gods.
Exactly, appease the gods. It wasn't really about ethical or spiritual matters in the same way that we see with the Israelite prophets.
Yeah, that's a huge difference.
And in fact, they often included this disclaimer.
A disclaimer. What?
Yeah, like, let my Lord do as he pleases.
Huh. Interesting. So that's more like advice than a command.
Right, exactly. It's very different from the kind of, imperative pronouncements that we see coming from the Israelite prophets who were, demanding obedience to Yahweh and even criticizing empty rituals.
Right. It's about a relationship with God, not just pleasing him.
Exactly. It's not just about going through the motions. It's about a genuine transformation of the heart and aligning your life with God's will.
Okay, so we can probably rule out Mesopotamia as a direct influence then.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty different ballgame.
Okay, but what about Egypt? They had a pretty complex religious system, right?
Right, they did. And there are actually a few texts that have sparked some debate among scholars about potential connections to Israelite prophecy.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, one of them is called the Admonitions of Apur.
Interesting name.
I know, right? It dates back to around 2000 BC, and it's this really fascinating text where this guy named Ippur is basically lamenting all the terrible things that are happening in Egypt.
Okay.
There's chaos, famine, social upheaval, the whole nine
That's
yards.
rough.
Yeah, not a good time to be alive. But then in the midst of all this doom and gloom, he describes this ideal king who will come along and set everything right.
Oh, so like a savior figure.
Exactly. He talks about this king smiting down evil and restoring order and justice.
That sounds kind of similar to some of the messianic prophecies in the Hebrew Bible.
Right, and that's where the debate comes in. Some scholars see this as a potentially precursor to those messianic ideas,
Okay.
while others are a little more cautious.
Makes sense.
There are actually three major translations of this text,
Wow.
and they don't even all agree on whether this king is from the past or the future.
Oh, wow. So it's a bit of a mystery.
It's a total mystery. Plus, the text itself is pretty fragmented.
So we're missing some pieces of the puzzle.
Exactly. So the context is really unclear. Even if it is pointing to a future king, it still lacks that spiritual depth and universal scope that you find in the Israelite messianic hope.
Right. It's more about restoring order to society than about spiritual salvation.
Exactly. So it's an interesting parallel, but it's not a clear-cut case of influence.
Okay, so what other Egyptian texts are we looking at?
Well, there's another one called the Prophecy of Nekherohu.
Okay, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, this one takes us to the court of Pharaoh Snefru.
Okay.
And apparently he was a little bored one day and wanted some entertainment.
I can relate.
So he asked his advisors to find someone who could tell him about the future.
Sounds like a fun afternoon.
Right, enter Neferohu, this wise man who initially claims that he can't actually see the future.
Oh, I bet there's a twist.
You know what? He ends up describing the rise of a future king named Amenemhat, who actually came to power centuries after Snefru.
Wow. So on the surface, it sounds like a prophecy.
Totally. But scholars are pretty skeptical about this one.
Why is that?
Well, they point out that it could have been written after Amenemhat, I was already in charge,
Oh, I see.
as a way to legitimize his rule.
So more like propaganda than prophecy.
Exactly. It's a classic move, rewrite history to make it seem like you were destined for greatness all along.
Clever, but not exactly genuine.
Right. So again, we have this interesting parallel, but not necessarily a direct source of influence.
Okay. So we've ruled out Mesopotamia and Egypt.
Yeah. So far, so good. But what about the Canaanites? They were right next door to the Israelites.
Right. You'd think there would be some influence there.
You would think so. But here's the thing. We have barely any Canaanite texts describing anything even remotely close to prophecy.
Wait, seriously?
I know. It's kind of shocking, right? But hold on. There's a twist.
There's always a twist. Okay. I'm listening.
What about the prophets of Baal and Asherah that we read about in the Bible?
Oh, yeah, like during Elijah's showdown on Mount Carmel?
Exactly. Weren't they Canaanite prophets?
That's a good point.
It is a good point. But here's the thing. When you look closely at what they were actually doing, it doesn't really line up with what we understand as prophecy in the Israelite tradition.
How so?
Well, they were engaged in these really intense rituals, like self-harm and frenzied dancing.
Oh, wow.
Which seems more akin to ecstatic frenzy than receiving and conveying divine messages.
So more like a trance state than a prophetic vision.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't seem to represent a coherent tradition of prophecy like we see in Israel.
Okay, so not quite the same thing.
Not quite. Now, there was one interesting Egyptian text called The Journey of Winaman.
Okay.
Where this Egyptian priest encounters a possessed youth in Phoenicia, which is part of Canaan.
Uh-huh.
And this youth delivers a message to the king.
Interesting.
So it suggests that there might have been some forms of ecstatic or visionary experiences happening in Canaan.
Right.
But it's still a far cry from the ethical, historically rooted, and theologically complex nature of prophecy as it developed in ancient Israel.
Yeah, it seems like Israelite prophecy was really in a category of its own.
It really does. And that's what makes it so fascinating. So we've explored Mesopotamia, Egypt, and Canaan.
And none of them seem to fully explain the origins of Israelite prophecy.
Right. So where did it come from?
That's the million-dollar question.
It is. And that's what we're going to dig into in the next part of our deep dive.
I can't wait.
This is where things get really interesting. Okay. So we've ruled out those other cultures as the direct source of Israelite prophecy.
Yeah.
Which is pretty wild when you think about it.
It really is. Like, they had this unique flavor.
Totally. And it kind of raises the question, like, what was it about their understanding of God
right. That
made Israelite prophecy so distinct?
Yeah, what set it apart?
So Vinoy's lecturer pointed out that the Old Testament presents prophecy as this divine gift.
Okay.
But what did that actually look like in practice?
Right, how did it work?
Yeah, give me the behind the scenes.
Well, it wasn't like God was, you know, dictating word-for-word transcripts.
Right.
It was much more dynamic than that.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
So think of it this way. The prophets were deeply connected to God.
Okay.
Spiritually and emotionally. They were tuned in to God's will, and they were really sensitive to the events happening around them.
So kind of like spiritual antennas.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Picking up signals.
But it's important to remember that they were still human beings.
Right.
With their own, you know, personalities and experiences and perspectives.
They weren't just robots.
Exactly. And that's what makes the prophetic book so compelling.
Okay.
You see this interplay between the divine and the human.
Right.
This fusion of God's message with the prophet's own unique voice and style.
And then how come they sometimes delivered messages that were so harsh?
Right. All that fire and brimstone stuff.
Yeah. Like, it could be kind of intense to read sometimes.
It can be. It's important to remember that the prophets weren't just fortune tellers,
okay,
predicting the future. Their role was much deeper than that.
Okay, so what were they doing then?
They were messengers calling the people back to God,
mm-hmm,
reminding them of their covenant obligations, holding up a mirror to society and saying, hey, this isn't how it's supposed to be.
So those doom and gloom pronouncements were actually like wake-up calls?
Exactly, like a divine course correction.
Mm.
They were meant to shake people out of their complacency,
okay,
expose their wrongdoing, and ultimately point them back toward a path of repentance and restoration.
Wow, that put a whole new spin on things. But let's be real, some of those prophecies are pretty hard to understand.
Right.
Even for us today.
Definitely. All that symbolism and poetic language.
It can be a lot.
Remember, they were speaking to a specific audience in a specific historical context.
Right.
They were using language and imagery that would have resonated with the people of their time.
So it's like trying to crack a code.
Yeah. But with careful study and attention to the historical background, we can start to unlock the meaning of these prophecies.
Okay.
And appreciate their enduring relevance.
I'm ready to break the code. Where do we even begin?
Well, one of the central themes that runs through the prophetic books is this idea of covenant.
Okay. Covenant, like the agreement between God and Israel.
Exactly. God had made the special agreement with Israel, a promise of blessings in exchange for their obedience.
Right, like a divine contract.
Exactly. And the prophets were constantly reminding the people of this covenant,
mm-hmm,
highlighting both its promises and its obligations.
So when the people strayed from God, the prophets were there to say, hey, remember that agreement we made?
Yeah, you're not holding up your end of the bargain.
And what happened if they didn't hold up their end of the bargain?
Well, the consequences of breaking the covenant were serious stuff.
Like what?
Exile, war, famine, all the things that the prophets warned about.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't something to be taken lightly.
No kidding. Okay, but it wasn't all about punishment, was it? There was also that threat of hope.
Oh, absolutely. Alongside those pronouncements of judgment, you also find these incredible prophecies of restoration.
Okay.
Of a future time when God would renew the covenant with his people and establish a kingdom of peace and righteousness.
Time of healing and hope.
Exactly.
So that's the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes. And this hope for the future was rooted in the very character of God.
Okay.
In his unwavering faithfulness and love for his people.
That's powerful. Okay, so we've got covenant, judgment, hope. Any other big themes we should be aware of?
Well, one that's particularly relevant to our exploration is the idea of social justice.
Oh, yeah, the prophets were always calling out injustice.
They were incredibly outspoken about injustice and oppression.
Okay.
Whether it was directed at the poor, the marginalized, or the vulnerable.
So they weren't just concerned with people's personal relationship with God.
No.
But also with how they treated each other.
Right. They saw this direct link between spiritual faithfulness and ethical behavior.
Okay.
In fact, they often condemned empty religious rituals that weren't accompanied by genuine care for others.
So it wasn't enough to just go through the motions.
No, you had to actually live out your faith in a way that impacted the world around you.
Actions speak louder than words?
Precisely. The prophets were calling for a transformation of hearts and minds.
Right.
A shift from self-centeredness to a genuine love for God and neighbor.
Okay, that's a powerful message, especially for us today. But how do we apply these ancient prophetic pronouncements to our own lives?
Right. We're not living in ancient Israel anymore.
Exactly. We're dealing with a whole different set of challenges.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is.
And it's one that we'll explore further in part three of our deep dive.
I'm ready for part three. Welcome back for the final part of our deep dive.
All right.
We've been talking all about ancient Israelite prophecy.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have. And, you know, we've debunked some myths about where it came from. We've explored what made it so unique.
Mm-hmm.
And we even started unpacking those big themes.
Yeah, covenant judgment, hope, social justice.
Right, those timeless ideas. But now I'm really curious.
Okay.
How does all of this connect to our lives today?
Right, good question.
It's easy to think of those ancient pronouncements as just that.
Yeah, ancient.
Ancient. But you're saying that the prophetic message is still relevant?
I think so.
Okay, so convince me. What's our first stop on this relevance tour?
Let's start with covenant.
Okay.
Now, obviously, we're not bound by the same specific covenant that God made with ancient Israel.
Right.
But I think the underlying principle is still really powerful.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, we're called to live in relationship with God.
Uh-huh.
And that relationship comes with certain responsibilities.
So it's not just about believing in God.
Right.
But about how that belief shapes our actions.
Exactly. Faith in motion.
I like that. Okay, but what about judgment?
Oh, yeah. That's a big one.
It is. Are we still under threat of divine punishment if we mess up?
You know, I think the concept of judgment might need a little reframing for a modern audience.
Okay, I'm listening.
It's not so much about God zapping us with lightning bolts.
Right.
But more about the natural consequences of our choices.
Interesting. So cause and effect, but on a spiritual level.
Yeah, exactly. When we turn away from God's ways and embrace things like selfishness and greed and injustice, it creates this ripple effect.
Okay.
It leads to brokenness in our own lives and in the world around us.
So we reap what we sow.
You got it. Our actions have a real impact.
That's a powerful thought.
It is. And it's a call to awareness and responsibility.
Okay, so we've talked about covenant and judgment, but we also explored that thread of hope.
Right.
That runs through the prophetic message.
Yeah, the promise of a better future.
Exactly. Are those ancient promises still relevant for us today?
Absolutely. The prophetic season of a restored world, a kingdom of peace and righteousness that's timeless.
It's like a North Star.
Yeah, guiding us towards a better future.
But it's not just about passively waiting for that future to arrive, is it?
No way. The prophets challenged people to be active participants in bringing about that transformation.
So we have to be agents of change.
We do. That's where that whole social justice piece comes in.
Right. Speaking up for the marginalized, fighting for equality.
Exactly. We can't just focus on our own personal relationship with God.
Yeah.
We have to be concerned with the well-being of others, especially those who are most vulnerable.
It's all connected.
It is. And the prophets remind us that our faith should be visible in the way we treat those around us.
Okay, so I'm seeing how these ancient themes can come alive in our modern context.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
But let's be real. Putting these principles into practice in our daily lives.
Yeah.
It's not always easy. Where do we even begin?
I think it starts with listening.
Listening to what?
Listening to those prophetic voices, both ancient and modern.
So cracking open those prophetic books and seeing how their words speak to us today.
Exactly. And paying attention to the prophetic voices in our own time.
Okay. So like who?
Well, those individuals and communities who are speaking truth to power, fighting for justice, working towards a more compassionate and equitable world.
Those voices are all around us.
They are, if we listen closely.
So it's like connecting the ancient with the modern.
Right.
Finding that thread of prophetic inspiration that weaves through history. It's like we're all part of this ongoing conversation.
Yeah.
This collective effort to create a better future.
Beautifully said. And as we participate in that conversation, we might even discover our own prophetic voices.
Our own prophetic voices? What do you mean?
Well, we might find the courage to speak up against injustice, challenge the status quo, work toward that vision of hope that the prophets so powerfully articulated.
So we're all called to be part of that prophetic tradition.
In our own way, each of us carrying a little bit of that torch forward.
I love that image. Wow, so we've come full circle.
We have.
We've explored the ancient roots of Israelite prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And we've discovered how its message still resonates today.
It's been quite a journey.
It really have. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's one final thought you want to leave our listeners with?
I would say this. Don't let the conversation end here. Keep listening.
Okay.
Keep questioning. Keep seeking those prophetic sparks.
Okay.
Both in ancient texts and in the world around you.
That's great advice. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive.
It was my pleasure.
And until next time, keep exploring, fellow knowledge seekers.